welcome. As always, even though that music is from Two Guys Gaming, this is One Guy Reading. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, noob of all trades, and in this particular series, I am reading and reacting to the book The Poppy War by R.F. Kuang. I meant to get out 3 episodes per week so that I could be ready for Dragonlance in August. As of right now, this is only the 2nd episode this week, so I'm already behind schedule, but not quite as bad as I got with Jurassic Park. So, I don't know. I will have to think about it and kind of play it by ear and see how I'm going to approach going forward, if I'll be able to get it done by August so that I can start Dragonlance on time, or if maybe that one gets delayed. I don't know. We'll see. In this episode, I'm going to discuss Chapter 3 and Chapter 4. As I always do, I will read a summary. This summary comes from supersummary.com. I will put a link in the show notes like I did with the Cliff's Notes, Spark Notes for Jurassic Park, so that you can read the summary yourself and some of the other things that they put up there on the page. And then after that, I will give my reaction to the chapters. Okay, without any further explanation, let's get to the summary. Part 1, Chapter 3, Summary. The first years are greeted by the Grand Master of the Academy, who introduces them to the 6 Masters. During the first year, they will study combat, strategy, history, weaponry, linguistics, medicine, and lore. At the end of the year, they will undergo a trial, and the Masters will offer apprenticeships based on their evaluations. 1/5 of the class will not be selected. A kind apprentice named Robin leads Rin and 2 other female first years to the dorm. One is Nyang, a kindly girl with a mild northern accent. The other is String Vinca, a cruel Senegardian girl who immediately makes fun of Rin's accent and dark skin. Rin's first class is with the combat instructor, Master Jun Laron. As Jun teaches them about Qi, the bodily energy they must channel to fight, Rin realizes that the other students outmatch her in knowledge and abilities. In history, Master Yim dismisses Rin's answer about how Nakan won the Second Poppy War as, quote, propaganda they put in countryside textbooks, end quote. A wiry-haired boy named Chin Kite say that Nakan didn't win the war. A western country named Hesperia intervened when the Federation of Mugen massacred a Nakara tributary named Spear, which produced Nakan's most deadly fighting force. Rin thinks Nakan allowed the genocide of the Spearly people, dark-skinned, with a separate culture, religion, language, and script, to happen on purpose. At lunch that day, Rin meets Kite, who entered school a year early and has a photographic memory. Kite says that while he, Nisha, and Venka grew up together, they have never been kind to him. He compliments Rin for giving Nisha a black eye, and the two form a tentative friendship. After lunch, an apprentice leads them to a garden for lore, but the lore master never arrives. Nisha realizes that the garden is filled with poppy plants, which are used to make opium. Everyone panics and leaves, except for Rin and Kite. Part 1, Chapter 4, Summary. One morning before combat in late autumn, the first years see their absent lore master, Zheng Ziya, high in a tree. Zheng and Jun bicker until Jun knocks him from the tree and calls him a lackwit. Zheng leaves dramatically, quote, swinging his hips like a whorehound dancer, end quote. In the evenings, Jun's apprentices host combat practice. There, Rin and Kite watches Nisha shows off an elaborate but useless combat sequence. Rin teases Nisha about his dance, and Nisha challenges her to a duel. Rin agrees and deals him a humiliating blow to the groin. After this, lines are drawn among the first years. Only Kite sides with Rin. The others, terrified into submission by Nisha, mock Rin for her skin and accent. The next week, Raban takes the first years into the basement fighting pits where a famous fifth-year student, Altan Trengsen, is having a match. When Rin and Kite see Altan, they realize he is a Spearly. His skin is darker than Rin's, and his eyes are scarlet. Raban says that Altan is the last of his race. Altan tidily defeats 3 challengers in a row. The next day, the first years are giddy over Altan. Only Nisha mocks him, echoing racist pseudoscience about Spearlies. Rin, who has experienced colorism at the academy, empathizes with Altan. In history, Kite asks Master Yim if they could discuss Spear. Yim reviews the Nakara occupation of Spear. Rin asks if it's true that the Spearlies were fire shamans. Nisha and Yim mock her belief in Tikkeni's backward myths. Kite stands up for Rin, citing documentation of Spear's affinity for fire and questioning why else the Federation would target Spear. Nisha and Yim double down, degrading Spearlies as primitive drug-loving freaks and war-obsessed. In combat, Rin is paired with Nisha in sparring practice. They abandon the exercise the fist fight, and Jin pulls them apart. He suspends Nisha for a week, but berates Rin at length for being peasant trash. He bans her from combat class henceforth. Thank you again to supersummary.com for that summary. It's pretty super. Drumroll. Okay, sorry. Thoughts while reading the chapters. We got the line, quote, "We call out of necessity, not cruelty," end quote. This comes as an explanation that the attrition rate after the first year is 20%. By the end of that year, a fifth of you will be gone, is how they actually frame the outcome. So yeah, tell me more about how cruelty is not the motivator. Anytime someone tries to say that their actions come not from cruelty, you can be sure they're lying. Okay, maybe not lying. Perhaps they either actually believe their bullshit, or they are so deep in the weeds that they can't see the forest for the trees. It's a way to shift blame from their cruelty to the victims of that cruelty. Call me a snowflake, parenthetically, or whatever, all you want. I've heard it all. I also considered it myself. I come to my thoughts, opinions, and ideas honestly. I continually consider other viewpoints, even those that directly conflict with my own. In fact, I seek them out. If you can't stand against scrutiny or burden of proof, then are you really worth anything? That is one massive way that technology failed us, or that we failed ourselves and the technology. Social media allows us to exist in worlds in which nothing we say, think, or do is ever challenged. And that harms us as a people and a society. Heck, from the last couple of days alone, I have stories of considering other possibilities. Not to brag, but from today, I actually could tell a few stories about opposing viewpoints. But for the sake of time, I limited this particular discussion to those ideas that have the potential to change deeply held beliefs. In the interest of full disclosure, no actual beliefs changed. Hey, I'm open-minded, not wishy-washy. Let's start with the second conversation first. It involves a less strongly held belief. I also think about it often and reconsider my position anytime the topic comes up. We started reading a book during summer school today, and the main character initially comes off as an entitled brat. You know the deal. Her father spoils her, and she interprets that as unconditional love. She thinks her mother, on the other hand, gives her too much of a hard time for it. I said something along those lines during a discussion, and the paraprofessional in the room countered, quote, "I think mom is just trying to keep her grounded," end quote. So maybe a few things to unpack here. First of all, the concept of being spoiled. Where does it come from? Who does it affect? Is it really a different thing, or does it just boil down to being entitled? And does it feel like it, or are both way more likely to be attributed to females? Okay, getting off track. Not the time for that discussion. According to the warning that I read in the first episode, there's sexism in this book, so maybe I can work it in then. For now, let's just focus on the concept of quote-unquote spoiled. As a part-time word nerd, I often wonder about words and their origins and histories. I once watched the Netflix show about swear words, because they, especially, intrigue me. How can you have a bad word? It just doesn't make any sense to me. While the show really didn't shed much light on the topic, my fellow word nerd, my son Liam, actually did some research and came up with some interesting results. A quick word about swearing, parenthetically. I promise to tie it all together in parenthetical. Liam learned that, parenthetical, other than the traditional words that take the Lord's name in vain, in parenthetical, swear words come from words used by the lower classes. So like much of this stupid society, the concept of swearing is rooted in classism and racism. I wonder if the same can be said about quote-unquote spoiled. However, I just thought of something. The saying, quote, "spare the rod, spoil the child," end quote. Is that a Bible thing? Seems sufficiently cruel enough to come from the Catholics. Like, beat the shit out of your kids so they know who's boss, and don't get any ideas of their self-worth. But we frame it as quote-unquote big head or quote-unquote too full of themselves. And that's where the issue lies for me. At what point does self-confidence become cockiness? And are the rules different for different people? But of course, I'm sure that women are far more likely to be called spoiled. Also, ever since slavery, a certain segment of the population in this country infantilizes black people. So they probably bear the brunt of it too. Lo and behold, the main character of the book in summer school is a black teenage girl. But again, that's not what this particular conversation is about. So, let's return to the main questions. What is the concept of quote-unquote spoiled? Also, when does self-confidence and assurance become a negative? The problem is that I think that identity plays a huge part. Take Deja, for example. He exhibits several qualities of entitlement or being spoiled. Yet his qualities make him a prime candidate for leadership. I'm not saying, I'm just saying. I told you, we always get you there. However, I still never got to the main points. What is spoiled? And when does self-confidence become a problem? Actually, maybe I did. It's just that the answer is not satisfying. The old porn versus art argument. You know it when you see it. And such ambiguity has never been exploited to take advantage of a situation, right? Right? The second story also comes courtesy of summer school. They hire high school graduates as aides for the classroom and cafeteria. Due to my employment at the high school, I know many of them. As you probably guessed, that's not the main point of this. Just flexing my muscle as a teacher in a small rural community where everybody knows your name. Anyway, my wife, parenthetically, who is a social butterfly and actually talks to people, in parenthetical, spoke with a couple of the kids, and several of them said that they worked 3 jobs for the summer. You all know what's coming next. I spent the better part of last episode talking about it. I will try to approach it from a different angle this time. 3 jobs? We are all okay with recent high school graduates working 3 jobs in the first summer post-graduation? Well, Sean, they're probably saving for college. You know me and how to speak my language. As an education guy, I agree that college is a worthy goal. But allow me a Columbo reference. There's just one more thing. Why is college so fucking expensive in this country? Furthermore, why have we convinced so many people that college is necessary and then made it so cost prohibitive? It can't be that we set up a predatory loan system that traps people in a cycle of simulated poverty and then makes them dependent on that very system for their survival, can it? No way. These same kids who worked 3 jobs, then went to college while working, suddenly become lazy when they graduate, are now ungratefully sucking at the generous teat of the makers. They expect to get fairly compensated, what? For their knowledge? And beg for the ability to have some of that money left over for nice things like food and shelter? I mean, how cool is it when you're forced to work simply to live? Man, we got the best system out there. And don't you forget it.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
So yeah, when they say that cruelty isn't the reason, at the very least, they mean that it's a nasty side effect. One they refuse to do anything about, but certainly not their intent. I mean, I don't know how we've gone so long believing the lies and bullshit, and allowing ourselves to be exploited for so long. Is the America fuck yeah at all really that powerful? Your entire identity is built on winning the birth lottery, and being born in the quote-unquote greatest country in the world? Go on with your bad self, I guess. Now let's catch up with the characters. Rin makes some friends. By the end of it, only one person stands by her side. That's because she gets in deeper with Nisha, and he follows through with one of the threats that I feared after the first episode. She learns more about military history, witnesses an underground fighting ring, trains in the art of the staff, and schools some of her classmates about opium and the poppy flower. That all makes it sound like she was far more successful than she was. But alas, as you know, I'm an optimist. Kate, the only friend that Rin has by the end of the section. While others either fear or respect Nisha, he also has felt the wrath of the little douchebag. So after Rin humiliates him, Kate sides with Rin. 2 outcasts align. Not the strongest alliance, but perhaps the start of something. Nisha. Rin shits on him after he shows off. That unleashes more of his fury, and he forms a goon squad to exact retribution. This all quickly escalates. Teachers and professors. The teachers, professors introduce themselves first with a cruelty line. Then the students get a more clear and personal introduction during their classes. Yim, the history professor, conducts class in much the same way that I do. He asks questions and probes them for the information, as opposed to feeding it to them. Jin, the combat instructor, predictably runs class in a brutal manner, even going so far as to quote a story about teaching discipline through beheadings. Zhang, the lore master, is rumored to be a junkie. At the very least, he is unorthodox and quite possibly insane. He gives off Yadu, parenthetically, one of my favorite teacher professors of my life, and parenthetical vibes. If Feyrek is not an integral part of the story, I hope that Xiang is. Keeping score. I already talked about being right about Nisha, putting together a group of thugs to help him do his dirty work. To his credit, though, he also gets involved himself through clever manipulation and subterfuge. I hate him for it, but he is quite the puppet master. So far, I was wrong about Raban, the apprentice who broke up the fight. Doesn't look like, as of right now, that he will serve as a mentor to Rin. Instead, it looks bleak and that she may end up as one of the casualties. Because as far as her settling into the school, it's a mixed bag at best and an absolute disaster so far, if I'm being honest. I painted way too rosy of a picture earlier. Because outside of those things, the rest of the time went abysmally. Plus, Nisha is bad enough. Now Jun joined in to crush her hopes and dreams. It may prove to be too much for her. What's next? I mean, I'm rooting for her. I want her to rise and to succeed. I know that would probably happen, but I'm having difficulty seeing a path forward. We always root for the underdog here, and holy shit, is she an underdog. I mean, I don't expect things to simply turn around for her and fall into place, but this is grim. Her only friend made the same powerful enemy. Furthermore, Katei doesn't seem to have any better plan for dealing with him. They're both just miserable company right now. Okay, let's see if we can find a path forward. Get Nisha out of your head. Focus on your studies, especially on redeeming yourself to Jun, a powerful enemy or ally. Your choice. Hopefully it's not too far gone. From there, you just have to survive the rest of the year and make it through the calling process. Otherwise, as combat instructor, Jun has the ability to make life absolute hell for you. Forget making it to next year. You may not make it out alive. Again, grim. But at least there's a chance. God, what an abysmal start to this story. Speaking of what I liked best and least. I didn't mean that as a judgment of quality. I like the story and I want to read more. Rather, I say that to decry the treatment of Rin. Because that's the only thing I don't like about the book so far. The borderline abusive treatment, in the name of discipline, or whatever, always rubs me the wrong way. I've told the story before, but I got hit as a kid, both at home and at school. The old line used to be, well, we turned out okay, so I'll hit my kids too. A, I realized, parenthetically, maybe too late in parenthetical, that I didn't turn out okay. I came to the realization that I already had all the power in the relationship with my kids. I didn't need to take or exert more with physical violence. Seriously, it's borderline psychotic. And yet, it persists. Proliferates, even. I've had more students talk about physical violence as punishment over the past few years than makes me comfortable. It's just yet another way that society and I don't see eye to eye. I wonder why I withdraw more and more into my hermit lifestyle recently. But hey, as ever, let's try to end this on a positive note. Things got pretty dark there. It would be simultaneously very easy and quite difficult. Easy because I enjoyed everything else about the book. Hey, we all know why you come here. It's the eternal and enduring optimism. Because of that, though, comes the other side of the coin. How do I pick a liked best? Oh, I got it. Super specific this time. The introduction of the Spearly, Altan, and his mastery over martial arts brought me back to the movies from my youth. I mentioned last episode that most of my knowledge of Eastern cultures comes from the martial arts movies. Partial to Jackie Chan, I also watched the Bruce Lee classics. Then, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon absolutely blew me away. Altan, the silent warrior that dispatches opponents with both brutal efficiency and mocking boredom, makes me smile and want more of this character. Add in the fact that they slaughtered his people during one of the Poppy Wars, and you have a recipe for a successful and fun character. As an honorable mention, we hear some rumors of the fantasy element in the book. There's discussion of quote-unquote ki as a mysterious force that allows for extra human abilities. That conversation gets quickly refocused to explain that ki simply means the energy of life. By knowing the proper technique, though, it can look like magic. Additionally, the Spearly are spoken of as manipulators of fire. Rin uses the term fire shamans. Again, this talk is shunned as nonsense and folklore. But we all know what that means. Eventually, the folklore becomes the accepted lore. Yay! Final thoughts. While I haven't researched the thought I might, parenthetically, I have enough trouble keeping up with everything as it is now, in parenthetical. Somewhat proven by the fact that I only got 2 episodes out this week. I still appreciate the different style of the book. It makes me curious to learn more about the history that inspired the events in the book. Figure out where the history ends and the fiction begins, perhaps. Plus, it fills in one of my blind spots. Traveling to Germany, traveling always does this, right, made me realize that I have many. While not out of the ordinary, I want to learn as much as possible about as much as possible. Therefore, I really need to figure out a way to incorporate my study of the history behind the book one way or another. While much information can sometimes be a bad thing, parenthetical, at least it can feel that way, in parenthetical, I think that it can only increase my enjoyment of the story and the book. Who knows? Maybe with some context, I will have a better idea as to why the story plays out the way that it will. As always, thanks for listening. You can find us if you haven't already at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles. I think this week I did the Marvel Snap article. I know I did the Marvel Comics, and I talked a bit about the X-Men number 700 issue, and felt bad for having missed that entire storyline over the last 5 years or whatever. no other podcast right now, as you know. Chris and I are having trouble once again getting together. We were supposed to meet a couple weeks ago to play, but as it does, life got in the way and we weren't able to. That's okay. Maybe I'll come with something just to do on my own. Next month, August, is our 10-year anniversary, so I'm thinking of ways to rework the page a little bit, maybe bring streaming on finally. Definitely going to get the YouTube up and running again, try to work on that Instagram that I'm always talking about, and who knows, maybe I'll come up with some other surprises for you. I will be back with this series, hopefully, to get caught up and get it done before August so that I can get the Dragonlance book started then. But again, we'll see how things go going forward. I will talk to you then. Bye, guys.